DW Africa Link.
They called themselves the Gen Z Revolution. 1 year on from storming parliament with flowers in hand and the Kenyan flag draped around their shoulders, Nairobi woke up again to a youth-driven uprising, a testament to their resilience and determination. This time, the movement was marked not just by defiance and remembrance, but also by a renewed sense of purpose. What was supposed to be a peaceful commemoration turned bloody again. 16 people died, shot by the police at least, according to Amnesty International. Let me underscore the day's events. Initially, peaceful commemorations descended into chaos as scattered groups whipped up flagstones to throw projectiles at security forces and chanted for the resignation of President William Ruto. The marches had been called for the anniversary of massive protests last year against tax rises that left at least 60 people dead and peaked when a huge crowd stormed Parliament. In addition, the anniversary became a crucible of grief and rage, fueled by the custodial death of a blogger, soaring living costs, and a political class seen as deaf. Wherever flags flutter today, whether in Nairobi, Mombasa, or Kisumu, they signal that this movement refuses to fade. That's what's coming up. Stay tuned. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Let me take you down memory lane. Just over a year ago in June 2024, Kenya's Gen Z-led movement erupted in protest against a controversial financial bill, a legislation that significantly affected the economic prospects of the youth, culminating in the storming of parliament and deadly clashes with police. Dozens were killed and hundreds injured, marking a turning point in youth political engagement. Now, on the anniversary of that uprising, a fresh wave of protests reignited across the country, this time fueled by deepening economic frustration, police brutality, and the custodial death of 31-year-old blogger and teacher Albert Omondi Ojwang. Arrested for his online criticism of police leadership, Ojwang died under suspicious circumstances while in custody, prompting murder charges against officers and galvanizing public outrage. The flower and flag protests have returned, transforming grief into a renewed demand for justice, transparency, and reform. When leaders fail to listen to the masses, chaos is always likely to ensue. Now, joining me for the discussion are political analyst Martin Olo, who will provide us with his expert insights, and DW's Andrew Wasike in Nairobi, who will give us a first-hand account of the situation on the ground. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for joining us here on DW Africa Link podcast, where today we are now discussing the aftermath of the protests that just happened in Kenya yesterday. Protests had been planned in all 47 counties with major gatherings in Nairobi, Mombasa, Kisumu, Nakuru, and Eldoret. Now, I'll just start with you, Andrew, as our correspondent on the ground. If you can just give us a general perspective of the day's events and, you know, the general mood in the capital, Nairobi, a day after commemoration of protests that left more than 60 people dead.
Thank you, Joseph, for having me on the show. The atmosphere here in Nairobi today is one of grief. There's exhaustion and growing frustration. Yesterday's protest held in memory of those killed in previous demonstrations, particularly that one last year on June 25 about the finance bill, turned tragic once again. At least 16 people were confirmed dead across the country, including in Nairobi, Kisumu, and Nakuru. That actually adds to a death roll that now has passed 60 since the Gen Z-led protests began. Here in the capital, you can still feel the tension. There are heavily armed police who are stationed in key areas this morning. Some roads remain closed. There's sorrow and anger on the streets, especially from young people who feel let down by a state they believe has responded to peaceful calls for justice with bullets. Even those who didn't protest are now shaken, and many feel this feels like a dark chapter for Kenya's democracy, but they will still keep protesting.
Right, Andrew, but from your explanation, I mean, people keep dying, you know, and a lot are injured. Do you see any signs as if the youths are saying, you know what, we need to stop this because more lives are being lost?
On the protesters dying, sadly, it's still the same playbook, Josie. If anything, it feels like the state has doubled down. The police response on Tuesday, like in previous protests which we have covered, was brutal and at times indiscriminate. We saw officers fire live rounds at an armed civilians, people who were just standing on the streets and watching what was unraveling. In Nairobi's CBD, the Central Business District, in Eldoret, in Kisumu, even in quieter towns like Nyeri and Nakuru, these are places where protests rarely happen. Videos showed police dispersing peaceful crowds with tear gas and force, not dialogue or de-escalation. Now, to be fair, the National Police Service also did say it was overwhelmed and that some officers would face investigation. But what people are saying is that that is reactive justice. It's after the damage is done that people are saying this. And many are saying that the problem is systemic. There's no proactive doctrine on safe crowd control, no clear accountability in real time. The same cycle repeats, you know. We expect them to do better. If they treated us like this last year, you expect them to know how to treat huge crowds, you know, the next year. Not the same way with live rounds and tear gas and, you know, water cannons. So the same cycle has repeated this time. Outrage, footage, hashtags, then also silence, like right now, silence. You don't know what is happening. Until these officers are held individually and institutionally responsible, we are going to keep seeing the same headlines because people know them. People have got footage. They were recording when these people were actually killing civilians. So the frustration from the public isn't just about one or two rogue cops. It's about a policing culture that sees public dissent as a threat and not as a right.
Wow, full of resilience there. Now, Martin, as our analyst, I mean, you just heard what Andrew said. You're also watching what is happening in Kenya. To begin with, what do you think of Wednesday's protests and how police handled the situation?
I want to believe that the Wednesday protests have been fairly successful because the young people and those who are concerned about good governance in this country came out in large numbers to express themselves, and they did that by coming out, risking their lives, being tear gassed and being shot at, and in some cases, even being killed. I mean, some lost their lives, and to the extent that they came to express themselves, they kept their promise. I believe that went well. Did the police handle the situation well? I believe that the police have always taken this a little bit, on the more brutal side, rather than on the more serious and perhaps more protective side of things. So the police, as always, again, were overreaching themselves in this matter.
Right. And Martin, foreign diplomats from countries including the US, UK and Germany had condemned the use of masked police officers and hired goons to disrupt peaceful protests. They also emphasized the importance of upholding democratic freedoms and warned against, you know, further violence. Is this something that Ruto's government is keen to put into practice?
As far as the Western diplomats and others and their, you know, press statement, I believe this has been a very important step and perhaps a very important development in the protection and integrity of democracy. What the diplomats are saying is, look, Kenyans have a right to demonstrate, they have a right to call for accountability, but that should not be the reason why the police or the government should arrive at them with so much force and so much brutality. And so that call was timely. It may not have been welcome, but certainly the issue of hiring goons, the issue of you know, not protecting demonstrators, and the issue of vandalizing or allowing vandalism to happen so that one can allege that the demonstrations are violent, isn't a good statement to make in terms of political and also in terms of social and in terms of economic good of the country. So the diplomats were right in speaking out and emphasizing that demonstrations should not be disrupted. This should be allowed to take place in a manner that's peaceful, so that the demonstrators have a responsibility to be peaceful, but they have the liberty to speak out and the freedom to express themselves. So indeed, that is an important element of protecting democracy.
Now, Andrew, just coming back to you as our eyes and ears on the ground, our reporter, you know, this conversation cannot conclude without us mentioning unusual events on Wednesday when a directive that all media houses should stop live broadcasts of the protests. Please briefly walk us through what transpired.
Also received the statement from the communication authorities of Kenya. That moment has sparked widespread debate. On Wednesday, the CAK, that is the Communication Authority of Kenya, issued a directive telling all broadcasters to stop airing live footage of the protests. Officially, the reason given was to prevent incitement and maintain public order. But to many Kenyans, this felt like an attempt to suppress transparency and silence dissent, because it was after this happened that people started getting killed and it started getting violent. Major networks here in Kenya like KTN News and NTV actually faced disruptions where the people from CAK went to their offices and put them off air. Journalists were warned, and in some cases, they were also harassed on the ground. But what the state couldn't stop was citizen journalism. You know, there are platforms like TikTok, X, and Instagram, which lit up with videos and live streams from ordinary people, especially TikTok, because so many people were live documenting the scenes from where they were, and many of whom captured the footage. Many of them did capture the footage of police brutality in real time. So even as the airwaves went quiet, the streets were still speaking and the public was still watching.
Right, right. Now, Martin, just to come back to you, Ruto also promised police officers his government would, in quotes, stand by them. You cannot use force against the police or insult or threaten the police. You are threatening our nation, in quotes. When you hear such a statement from President William Ruto, what goes on in your mind?
President Ruto is on record because he has said that he's going to stand by the police. I don't know why he needs to say so. If the police are doing a good job, they deserve to be protected by the government, by the president, as well as by the law and by the judiciary. So they don't need to be reassured that they will be protected. So when he says he'll stand by them, it means that he's telling them, go, kill, and I will not allow you to be charged. And that is not what Kenyans would be expecting. So it's a threat indeed to governance, a threat to peaceful demonstration. And that statement, indeed, as it turned out yesterday, did still lead to police acting excessively. And it would appear, therefore, that they were acting within the orders that they had been given. Remember, the meeting was specifically called, and perhaps orders may have been specifically given in that meeting that could have led to some of the occurrences that we saw yesterday.
Now, the Minister of Interior had warned protesters not to provoke police and questioned the legitimacy of the demonstrations. Martin, what does this tell us about the disconnect between the government and people's concerns?
The Minister of Interior, of course, had warned protesters not to provoke the police. Indeed, it is something that one has to be cautious about. It's not good to provoke the police, yes, but it's not good for the police either to provoke those who are unarmed. And to that extent, therefore, it is rhetorical to tell people not to protect, not to, to provoke, or to tell police not to provoke. It is expected. The police should keep the peace. It's expected. The police should be peaceful. It should be courteous to demonstrators, and the demonstrators should be peaceful, even as they express themselves. So indeed, it is a welcome move, so to speak, but one that does not need to be re-emphasized by the cabinet secretary of the interior, so that when he is talking about what the young people are saying and what the police should be saying, what is important for us is to understand whether he understands that all that these people are asking for is accountability. And if these people are asking for accountability, then all they're expecting of their government is to protect them and to promise that they'll be accountable and to keep to their promise. So they should not be seen to lose their lives or seen to be to be rebels without a cause. Indeed, I believe they have a cause, and that is something that needs to be respected in that respect.
Right. Now, Andrew, as we wrap up our discussion, if you can just tell or speak to an outsider, do Kenyan politicians really understand the people that they lead?
Well, do Kenyan politicians understand the people that they lead? Honestly, it's hard to believe they do. These protests, especially led by young people, the Gen Z, have been about far more than just the finance bill. What we are witnessing is a generation that feels abandoned. They see rising costs, joblessness, their corruption scandals, and now violence from the very institutions meant to protect them. And yet the political response has mostly been dismissive. The president has said nothing, has just been silent and not supporting his people, the people who elected him. Instead of listening, leaders have accused protesters of being foreign funded, misled, or even criminal. And we are here asking ourselves, how is it that you can fund over 10,000 people, you know, from across the whole country? That is not true. There's been very little engagement with the actual demands being made. These are the demands from the youth and the protesters, because this time it's not just about the youth. Everybody came out. So no meaningful national address, no indication that those in power are willing to acknowledge the pain on the ground. There has been nothing. And so when young people are risking their lives literally to be heard, that tells you something is broken. Politicians seem to be operating in some sort of a bubble surrounded by security and privilege. This is something that the common citizen does not have, like me or like somebody who is on the streets. They are disconnected from the realities of most Kenyans. So until the politicians know that they can handle things in a better way by speaking to Kenyans, by understanding Kenyans and doing what they want, then I think we are going to see the same thing. So to answer you, to an outsider, it may look like just another protest, but to many Kenyans, especially the youth and the Gen Zs who were always silent, this is a moment of reckoning. It's not just a political crisis, it's a leadership one. And they're saying one term, which means they just want President William Ruto to rule for one term. And they're also saying Ruto must go. All these hashtags yesterday on X were trending. They surpassed almost 2 million. So this is a moment of reckoning. It's not just a political crisis. Like I said, it is a leadership one. And the question we are left with is, if the leaders won't change, will the people force the change themselves? And this is what I was saying. If the people decide to force the change, then we are going to have more and more protests. And it's going to get bloodier. People are going to get hurt.
Right. Thanks, Andrew. Now, Martin, your parting words as well, just to conclude our discussion, how would you describe the relationship between Ruto and his allies on the one side and the Gen Z?
The relationship, of course, between Ruto and his allies, particularly the ODM brigade, the former prime minister, it will appear that theirs is a collusion, or theirs is an agreement to keep quiet about ills, to keep quiet about human rights, and therefore to allow violations of human rights to happen as they look aside. Now, that is a misunderstanding and perhaps something that will not go down well with the young people, because their expectations are that they will be protected, they will be heard, and that they will be listened to in a manner that leads to changes that the country needs in order for the country to actually make the kind of progress that the young people are saying. Remember, these young people have no jobs. These young people have decided that they will not sit back and allow the other generational groups to just mismanage public resources and mismanage how things are run. And for that reason, they have a cause for which they want to fight, for which they are ready to even lay their own lives, and they've done that. And the best thing that what the president and his allies will do is to listen to them and to hearken to implement some of the changes or some of the issues that could be fixed in order for these young people to be to feel or even to get a sense that they have been heard and action has been taken.
DW's Andrew Wasike in Nairobi and political analyst Martin Olo, many thanks for joining us. Normally, I would have taken to other parts of the continent, but for today, let's stay in Kenya because Gen Z seem to be unstoppable. In the coastal town of Mombasa, it was a different ballgame. As usual, we spread our tentacles to bring the conversation closer to you. And that's why our very own Diana Wanyonyi is here to give us a brief. Diana, thanks for joining the discussion. First things first, I've heard that Mombasa is a beautiful and touristy city. First, quickly bring us up to speed on what transpired on the protest day and the mood this Thursday before I continue with the conversation.
Some of the issues that came out during the protest is that they wanted the Kenyan government to ensure that the families of the deceased and those who were injured are compensated and justice is prevailed, with the rogue policemen brought to book. So they want justice. They decided to march outside the office of the County Commissioner of Mombasa, that is Mohammed Noor. Noor received the memorandum and urged the protesters to disperse after the peaceful demonstration. Today is Thursday and the town is alive. Shops have been opened, people are in the streets, people are working. There is no tension, everything is well.
Interesting. Now, what caught your attention specifically? What made you think, wait a minute, I haven't seen this or didn't expect this, to say the least?
What caught my eye is that for the first time, we've seen the youths, the human rights, going to church to light the candles, to pray for the departed souls during the Gen Z, to pray for the sick, to pray for those who were injured during the Gen Z. And it was beautiful. It was beautiful seeing them singing, lighting the candles, you know. And they were tribeless. They insisted that they don't want politicians to join them. Let them just be. They just want to be themselves. They just want to express themselves. Some of them, they had placards that had pictures of the departed souls. Some were crying. You could see tears from their eyes, crying, and you could feel the mood was not okay. It really made me feel sad. It revealed the power of people. People have power. When people come together with one common goal, people have power.
Right. Now, Diana, how disgruntled are the youth in Mombasa, a city that most of us know, you know, as a tourist destination full of life, fun, joy, and perhaps one that is devoid of what happens elsewhere in Kenya?
With whatever is going on, youth are not happy, because most of them, they say that despite the fact that it's a tourist city, they don't have jobs. They are jobless. And due to high taxes that have been imposed by the government, some of them, even they find it difficult to do businesses. They also claim that even if they want to get, or they have applied for the loans from the government to start business, they will not get that loan immediately. They will have to go in circles with some of the officials. It will take long for them to get those loans. And moreover, they're not so sure about their safety, because they say that they fear walking alone. They fear to say something because they'll be abducted. When they see these small cars parked, they just don't pass by because they think that those people inside the car, they might abduct them. So it's not safe. They say that if our brothers and sisters are abducted, are killed, are injured, even when it's not during the protest, then what does it mean to them?
Oh, wow. I should really visit Mombasa one of these days. Thank you so much, Diana. We can only hope that Mombasa returns to normalcy. One can hope that politicians engage the people they lead in dialogue rather than unleashing tear gas, as we have heard. Let's remain hopeful for a peaceful resolution. That's all we can tell you about the story for now. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a crucial part of our community, and your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Your perspective is important to us. And remember, you can find all of the Africa Link podcast episodes on Spotify and Apple or wherever you listen to your podcasts from. This episode was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabi. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW. Made for Minds.